Hey, what's up? It's Moshpit Josh, and you're listening to, what's the name of the show again?
Dude, I fucking bricked it. Oh, man, I'm fucking terrible. Hood Rat Recap Podcast.
What's up, y'all? It's Moshpit Josh, and you're listening to the Hood Cat Recap Podcast. Jesus fucking Christ.
I literally need to write it down and look at it, because I keep, like, bricking it.
I'm going to do a blooper reel, I think.
Great.
You'd be surprised how many people fuck it up.
Rat.
Mosh Pits Josh. That's me. That's what you're listening to. Okay. What's going on, party people? This is Mosh Pit Josh here, and you're listening to the Hood Cat Recap Podcast.
You're the good kid. You're the good kid. You're the good kid. You're the good kid.
Bored, so we started a podcast about the best bar band in the land, man. This is the Hood Rat Recap, and we are back. We are your steady stream of the unified scene, all the news and the reviews of the band that we love, you love. Top 40 Radio? Does Top 40... Well, you know, I kind of agree with Meatloaf. 2 out of 3 ain't bad there. What do you guys think? I mean, we know Craig likes Meatloaf. Hello, everybody. This is Stage Right Mike on the mic. I'm from St. Paul, which must be the unluckiest saint of them all. We're going to be doing a lot of time zone traveling today. Whenever I want to talk hold steady, I jump one time zone to these knuckleheads in New York. And I'm, as always, joined by my co-host with the most, the unified scene's very own King of Queens, Gasper. Gasper, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Mike, but you know what? I've been trying to get people to call me Lucky Charms.
Why is that, Gasper?
Well, one, St. Patrick's Day is coming. And two, because I'm magically delicious.
How's that working out for you?
Not very good. Not very good at all. People keep calling me Fruit Loops. So I'll stick with
I can see
Queens.
That.
You're fruity, right?
Oh, man.
This bit never gets old.
Oh, sorry to our listeners, because it's feeling old for me.
And that's the sound of our on-mic producer and third mic, Kevin is whenever. Kevin, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing great. Better than that joke, so. I mean, I'm sorry for everybody who's got to celebrate St. Patrick's Day and listen to this and hear that on the way in. But I do love Lucky Charms. That is my favorite cereal. So you had me for a second, and then oof.
I like that you're my biggest fan in this. It makes me so happy. And speaking of,
I'm supportive.
I guess that's true. So speaking of upcoming holidays, I mean, I don't know if it's a holiday, but it's a holiday for us. We turn 2 on March 8th. So happy birthday to us, and thank you for listening.
Happy birthday to the. Killer Podcast Almost Killed Me. That's the name of the very first episode.
That's true. That was the original name. Mike, you want to tell them why we're no longer called Killer Podcast Almost Killed Me?
Well, because when I named it that, I didn't realize that the true crime drama is like the driving force of the podcast world. So we just got buried behind a million true crime podcasts with Killed and Killed and I Love My Killer or Who's My Killer and all these names like that. So, yeah.
I imagine, too, like some of the early listeners were like some mid-American housewife was looking for like a new serial killer podcast. I'm like, oh, Killer Podcast Almost Killed Me. This is probably like true stories of people who almost died. And then you come up talking about Craig and the boys and they're like, this is not a murderer.
And so was born the Hood Rat Recap Podcast.
Yeah. And I think it's a better name anyways. I don't know about you guys, but
I like it.
I mean, we have a lot to talk about for this episode because we got to spend some time with Andrew from Australia, a big Hold Steady fan. So that was a lot of fun. But while we were off in between from the last one, we had a new song drop, one we've heard live a few times that we talked about. But what'd you guys think of Sixers, the studio version?
Yeah, I thought Sixers was a very surprising little release there. I really enjoyed it. I think, you know, like we said, it's very cinematic. It's got a very strong storyline. What did you guys think of the song?
I enjoyed it, man. It's so it was interesting after we had just done the episode with the ladies from the Holt study, Is for Women, where we talked a lot about relationships. We talked a lot about like who did what wrong and you know, how that was depicted and all that, where this is, it's a song where it goes wrong, but like, there's no one at fault here. You know what I mean? Like so she, in the story, like she's going to try to go and hit on the guy upstairs. And, you know, it sounds like she's kind of looking also to maybe upgrade her profile a little bit. He's a financial guy and she seems like she's trying to figure it out. And, you know, and it just doesn't work out. You know what I mean? And there's no one wronged anyone. No one did anything. And then it's just like a missed opportunity, basically.
When we talked about the song off the live from when we heard it at Massive Nights, you would kind of hope that it might be a basketball theme song or somehow tied to basketball. And then like, we didn't really get a chance to get into the lyrics because live you can't experience it. But now that we have it and it's out and you can read the lyrics, it's clearly not tied to basketball.
Well, I mean, she's watching basketball when the song starts, right? Like,
well, yeah, basketball replays and LeBron James are named in the first four lines.
Right. You know, but that's so, about the extent of it. Then the Sixers right. is really the
drink that she picks up. The yeah. alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys get the Sixers reference? I guess that's a six pack. I was thinking, I thought it was a drug reference, but I guess it's a six pack of beer. Did you, yeah, did you guys say it like New right. York like that?
I mean, I think it was said like that once. I don't know if we've ever actually said, let's go get a Sixer.
That might have even been before our time. As old as we are, I don't ever remember going, hey, let's go get a Sixer and toss it back.
Like Gasper said, the juxtaposition between the two. He lives in the penthouse. She brings up a bottle of pills. He's muddling mints for the drink. Who does that in their own house? You know, like you're at a fancy bar. And then he's listening to Sinatra, which she thinks is kind of square. So I really like the juxtaposition between the two of them. Like they're clearly two different types of people. And here they are coming together for this little moment. And yeah. And for the music, like he says, like crackling, what does he say that? Oh, he goes, it has to do with a chemical reaction, simulated synapsis, the snapping and the crackling. And I don't know if you guys noticed when the music first starts up, there's some snapping and crackling of the feedback of the guitars. And I kind of wish they would have played that up even more so, because it's a little underlined, but I think it'll sound better live.
Right.
What do you guys think?
Well, it is funny too, because you bring up the basketball replays that she's watching, and it actually ends talking about the same basketball replays even after this whole story kind of unfolds. So it's like the whole song kind of comes full circle back to where it started. So, you know, when I thought of Sixers, I was thinking of the Philadelphia team. So with right. a capital S, but really that's not what they were talking about here.
I think it's still a play on it. I mean,
they use the logo, right? There's like a Sixers style logo that got released with the song.
Oh, did they? I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's always into the double meaning of everything. So I think that definitely tracks. But so the when you were getting into the lyrics, there's a lyric I didn't catch. There's a something in a poster frame that he specifically says she thinks is kind of lame. What was that? Like
a Nagel. Do you remember the Nagel prints?
I don't.
Those were the cartoon girls. Go back to the 90s. Remember those cartoon girl posters? Like,
it's actually a Nagel poster was the cover of Duran Duran's Rio. So was a Nagel.
There you go.
Poster.
Good pull.
I understand. So, yeah, yeah.
And I am guilty. I had my first townhouse in the 90s when I was in my 20s, and I had over my bed, I had a Nagel girl, a poster where she was like all twisted up in the sheets, like right over there. So it's pretty corny, but yeah, I'm guilty there.
Yeah, that was an interesting reference too. When I heard it at first, it took me a minute to go back and go, "Oh man!" And then, like I said, tying it into the Duran Duran tie-in, which was sort of interesting.
Right. But I mean, now we have two songs off the record. They're both great, I think, and I think that says we can expect a really great release come the end of March.
Do you think we'll get one more single before then?
It's possible. I think if we do, it'll be Carlos Is Crying.
That's what I was going to say too. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know, because here we are, like we're a month away basically. They don't need to release a single. I mean, that might be a better question for Kevin, that this is more your wheelhouse. Like, do you release a song when there's, like you said, 10 songs and they've given us two? Do you give us a third?
I mean, timing wise, by the time, I mean, you got to realize, because of the way releases are, it's literally for streaming purposes, really. That's why they do it, because it gives them a chance to stoke the playlisting world. So they may drop one more just leading into release for that reason. But even these days, they're going to pick a focus track on release date that the streaming services will sort of try and put a focus on for any playlists that kind of follow them. So it's literally just a game for the ability to stoke pre-sales and stuff. So I don't think if let's play a game. I'm going to say they don't release another song between now and. Do you guys think they'll drop another song before? Don't go by my expertise because I've been.
I tend to think they will. Okay.
Oh, all right. All right. Mike's going on the other side. I like it. But by the time we'll get together to do the next show, we should have the whole record so we can figure it out. We'll know. We could answer this game-winning question. And if you're listening and you have any thoughts, feel free to tweet or text or
use our speak pipe. You could use our speak pipe. Tell them what speak pipe is, Mike.
If you'd like to leave us a voicemail about anything, stump us with a trivia question, or give us your crazy mixed up lyrics that you misheard, just go to SpeakPipe on our Facebook page and just leave a quick 30-second voicemail and you may end up on the air and may hear yourself on the air.
All right. Yeah. And before we bring Andrew in for our interview, Gasper got to go to the piano recital that Craig did at Carnegie Hall over the weekend. How was that?
That was amazing. It really was. I mean, he played two songs. It was a bunch of different artists playing. It was actually – so you had Kevin Morby, Eric Johnson from the Fruit Bats, Unweighed, Phil Cook, Joanna Samuels, Michelle Zoner from Japanese Breakfast. So there's a bunch of different people playing. But it was really, really cool to see him – on that legendary stage. I posted, is it weird that I feel proud for him? You know what I mean? Like it's, it was very cool. And so like he walks out in his tuxedo and his white sneakers and just sit, it's just him and a piano on the stage there. And like the place was packed. It was, and it went over really well. It's, he's definitely not the pianist that he was kind of up against with the other piano players. There were some pretty amazing piano players there, but it carried well. And the performances were great. I thought, there was a bit of a surprise in that, Stuart Boogie was there. And he was playing with another artist, but then came out with him on the second song, and Cassandra Jenkins was there as well. So she played with him as well on the second song. So they did Curtis and Shepherd, and, then they did, Never a Fair Fight, which I remember that song, and I have to go back and listen to it. It's Punk is Not a Fair Fight is the lyric, right? I'm almost positive that's what it is, but he dropped it for the performance, and I was like, is he doing that because it's Carnegie Hall, or is it just he just changed the song? And like when you think of the substance of a song, it's like I don't think he's really trying to water anything down. He delivered the song the way he always does. He dropped that one word. So I thought that was interesting. Might be a question for him down the road. But dude, it was great. It really was. And I was very happy to see him play Carnegie Hall. So props to Craig, man.
Excellent. It's like that old joke. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice.
Mm-hmm. Practice.
Good for him. 20 years, right? It was the 20-year anniversary of the Hold Steady. So, you know, he finally made it.
And look, man, it's just one more thing. It's been a hell of a year for them, man. It's with all these shows and the book coming out and now him playing Carnegie Hall. And like, it's just been like the year of the Hold Steady. I was telling Kevin over the weekend, there's a show coming up in Baltimore. He's playing a solo show and he's playing a place called the, I forget the name of it now. It's like the 30 Club or something like that. And I'm like, Baltimore is like 3.5 hours away. Like I could probably do that. And I looked it up and it's literally someone's living room. Like it's, I'm not familiar with this place, but it's, they turn their living room into a, or at least that's what it looks like online. They turn the living room into like a performance place. And it looks like there's like maybe 25 people. And I'm like, those tickets go on sale soon. I'm like, I don't know, man, maybe. It seems like it'll be a good time, but yeah, it's been a crazy year and there's more to come. So it's exciting. But speaking of more to come, you want to jump into our interview with Andrew?
Definitely. So Andrew's been a super fan, reached out to us and he's from Australia and, he was kind enough to hang out another hour because we still couldn't, Siri and Google still couldn't figure out if Melbourne was 15 or 16 hours ahead of us. So I think he ended up sitting around for an hour, but we're grateful he did it. And he's a big fan of the show, and he's got a book coming out, and he's got a podcast of his own, and we hear all about it. So.
Cool.
She
check it out.
She opens up the bottle and starts pouring out the pills, crushes it on the counter, being careful not to spill. He starts mixing drinks, measuring the jam, getting down the glassware, muddling the men. They talk about their work, where they went to school, how the city's kind of changed, how it used to be so cool. It's hard to make friends when your job is so demanding. They start dancing. Sunrise in the sundown, sending out for takeout.
So today we are here with Andrew from Melbourne. Andrew, how are you doing today?
Hey, pretty good, Mike. I always love the way Americans say Melbourne. Yeah. What's we just say Melbourne.
Melbourne? I can't say it that way. Melbourne.
Okay. It's like Melbourne, you know? So it's so I always love it when we hear Americans talking about Melbourne. You know, it's one of those little chuckles that we get from down here.
And so you have a podcast of your own, Andrew. Can you give us the name of that again?
Yeah, I do one called The Rev Limiter, which is all about car racing down here in Australia. So we review all the supercar races. So it's one of the biggest touring car formulas in the world. So if you've got NASCAR, which is stock cars, and that's the biggest of that sort, and anything else with a roof on it is called a touring car, effectively. And so we have the biggest touring car series in the world down here in Australia, and a race called Bathurst 1000, which people from all around the world come to try and win, and very few ever do. But so we just do that every after every race. We give a review of the race, and we do a preview and all those sort of things as well, but hoping to expand it this year. So we'll see.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Nice.
Now, is there a season for that? Like month to month, because you know here we have baseball and football, and they run through certain months. How does that work for touring racing down by you? Because the weather is a little different, I imagine. So I'm sure it's based seasonally.
Yeah, it is, and this has been one of the challenges actually with coming on this podcast, because a couple of times we've tried to do it, and I've been away at a car race somewhere. Which when I'm away at a car race, I'm in full on car racing mode, and finding a couple of spare few minutes is hard. But we start, our season starts in 2 weeks' time, and it runs all the way through to December. So it's a long series for only 12 races.
Wow.
So you think in that period of time in NASCAR, you've got about 40 races done. But so we only do 12 races. So there's about 3 weeks between each one of them. And, it covers over our winter, which is unusual. You know, but that said, you know, if you go up north in Australia to Darwin, for instance, where we race, it's probably like being in Miami in America. You know, it's a very different climate to New York, for instance. So Melbourne, from what I can see, is very similar to New York in its weather. You know, we have hot summers and cold winters, not as cold and not as hot as New York. Right. But, we got that sort. Yeah, head up north and it's completely different. So, you know, we do a lot of racing up north in the winter and more racing in the south in summer.
Gotcha.
Or spring and autumn.
Well, I know one time we were trying to get together, I think you had to go to a Guns N' Roses show also. So, like, how did you first discover the Hold Steady? I mean, what's the scene like down there in Australia?
Well, it's an interesting one. We had a radio station down here called Triple J, which used to be good, but it's now crap. Maybe that's just I'm getting old. I don't know, but I'm not quite attached at all. But they played Chips Ahoy on the radio one night. Now, I really kind of fell in love with that song. And then we have overnight on the weekends a video show called Rage, which runs on our national broadcaster. And then I saw the Chips Ahoy film clip. And then, you know, started hunting out a little bit, found a Hood Rat friend, and I said, oh, I've heard that before. And then it just sort of grew from there. And it's not like these days. I mean, obviously these days you find something you like and you just jump onto Spotify and you can go in and do a crash course on it. You just download, you know, heaps and heaps of songs within a short period of time and work out whether you like somebody. And one of the great things I've got from listening to your podcast is some of the bands that people talk about at the end. You know, and I've gone away and listened to those guys and actually picked up some bands that I really like out of that. You know, one of the things I love about the modern world with Spotify and, you know, the podcasts that we can listen to and, you know, whether it's this or even listening to Craig's one where he's talking to some of those people, like, you know, I'd never really listened to the first one he did, which was the Drive-By
Truckers?
Truckers, that's it. Sorry, yeah. And I'd never really listened to them because, you know, we don't get a lot of that sort of stuff down here in Australia that easily. You know, these days, obviously, as I said, it's so much easier now. And I said, I like when you listen to that and, you know, when you listen to a few of the songs, quite like them. Now they're on my playlist.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's different.
Were you able to see the they played, what do they call it? The Unpleasant Breakfast show or something like that?
Oh, yeah, the one that came over the internet. Yeah, I definitely logged on for that. That we had we got the two shows down here in Melbourne, but it was at like 9 a.m. or something, or even earlier, I think, one of them. But yeah, so I logged on to watch those. That was in the middle of our lockdown. So
okay.
Because Melbourne, just for you, we were the most lockdown city in the world up until recently, and only Rangoon has gone past us now. But you know, we had 278 days in lockdown,
wow,
which was pretty unpleasant. Yeah, the interesting thing, yeah, like obviously being able to log on and watch that was great because, you know, we had the Hold Steady show scheduled for 2020.
Right.
They were on the IndyCar, Indy 500 weekend, so there was a chance I was going to miss them anyway. But, you know, so then obviously got pushed out to 1 year later and then 2 years later, so they only ended up coming out here last year. So, you know, it was put off for 2 years at the time. But, you know, things like that really helped us, being able to do that, you know, log on and watch that. And my daughter, who's a bit of a music nut as well, so she blames me for it. But she's a big sort of Harry Styles fan, which you know, which I actually don't mind Harry. The other ones kind of irritate me a little bit, but I think Harry Styles is very clever. So she was in the, you know, room, you know, making outfits to wear to a Harry Styles concert, you know, and then of course Harry got cancelled, and Harry Styles is actually here in Melbourne this weekend.
Okay.
You know, so I had to drop her off at the concert so she could queue for it this morning. So she'll be there all day to go in there, and she had the show last night. But this is where music is so great, you know, it taps into your emotions. And when you're in tough times like lockdowns, you know, it was the escape. It was the thing that kept us all going and kept us all alive, or kept me alive anyway. But, you know, you just go in there and find something. And as I said, you know, jumping onto Spotify and just exploring, you know, your release radar comes through and you hear all these different things. And say, jump onto your podcast and they give me something at the end to go and listen to. And, you know, it was great when we were in really tough times.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when we were locked down, we had massive nights here, and that's always like the highlight of the year. And Kevin actually lives near me. We threw like a little party at the house and had the viewing of Massive Nights remotely, which wasn't quite the same, but it definitely made you feel like things were starting to get back to normal.
Well, the one upside for me is that I got a very good stereo speech system. So I had it so loud, it was like I was at the show. And not sure what my neighbors thought, but you know, it was cranked up. And I sat down on the floor, so the TV was up high, so it was like being at a show.
And it was very weird watching a lot of those streams in lockdown because, like, the songs would end and there'd just be silence, and the band would be like, and like nobody knows how to react. And you know, being on some of the other side of it, like I was in rooms when some of those streams were happening, and you know, you're playing to 7, 8, 9, 10,000 people watching, but it's you and 8 people in the room that are making this show happen. And when the song ends, even as you're in the room and you're there, you're watching, like, you don't know what to do. Like, do you clap? Do you not clap? Like, it just really created an awkward situation when you talk about how music was so instrumental and helpful in that point. Like, looking at it from the other side, from the artist's room, like, I'm sure that was some of the roughest and toughest shows they've ever played. Like, to have to kind of live Absolutely. In that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you think, like, how do you actually do it? Like, And one of the staggering things, so we went to the whole VIP session for the Hold Steady last year. And so I took my daughter one night and my son the next night, and then my daughter came the next night to the Corner Hotel. But we went to VIP, and she's sitting there, you know, they're very laid back when they're doing their sound check and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, she's kind of thinking, well, what's it going to be like? And then they come out and, you know, you've got all that intensity, and it's like just walking on the stage, you can feel it's 100% different. But how do you do that when there's no crowd in front of you? Like, it's an amazing thing to be able to do that, to just walk out and look at an empty thing, you know, the Brooklyn Bowl, there's not a person there, yet you can still deliver a performance like that. I mean, you know, credit to anybody who was able to do that. It's an amazing effort.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I don't know if you've been on stage when bands are on stage, but we used to have a thing here in Melbourne called the Big Day Out, and, you know, there'd be 40, 50,000 people there. And I was doing some thing at the time when I was trying to get some more funding for the arts in Victoria. So I had the Shadow Arts Minister, and we went up on the stage when a band called She Had was on stage. And the energy that comes back at you is just unbelievable. You know, you can see why musicians get off on it, why they get something special out of it. And you think, you know, you play the same song, you know, night after night after night after night, unless you hold steady and you do a different set. But it's that energy that comes back, and it's amazing. And you think, you're doing it on a camera and it's going on a live stream. How do you get the energy? And yeah, it's just amazing. And I think, you know, it did feel like a difference when you see them live. It felt different to watching it on the TV, obviously. And,
right.
You know, there was more intensity from the performance and all of those kind of things. And, you know, and you watch them during a show. And we'll talk maybe a little later about the Corner Hotel show that they did this year. And you could watch the intensity on the band grow as the night went on, as the crowd started pumping back at them, and you could see them lifting. You know, and at the end of it, you know, like Franz was just standing on stage and you just saw him looking around just going, awesome. he'd been blown away by what came back at him. And, like, that's music, isn't it? Like, that's the whole bar band type scene. It's you don't get that in stadiums as such, but, you know, you get that intimacy. And, you know, I love it. I just eat off it.
Right. Absolutely. So it was during those live streams that they did the fan stream. And I'm pretty sure he said that, like, that's kind of what kept them going, was, like, getting all the people at home with their signs and their pets and the different things. And, like, you could see where, watching it, how the show kind of took a turn there and got better because of the feedback.
Yeah, and absolutely. When you say, well, there's somebody from Melbourne and there's someone, I think they had people from Brazil and, you know, mm-hmm. there was some people in Hungary or something as well. Like, yeah, it was quite an amazing experience when you think about it. But you're enjoying this show with people from, yeah, every little part of the world. And even though you're not kind of getting it back at you, I mean, they obviously had a screen out front where they could see it all. Right. So they knew they were getting that part of it. They knew people were there and they were involved. Good experience, I thought, really.
I think it kind of highlighted for them, like, how many fans they have in different parts of the world, too. Because, like, just from the perspective here, like, I could talk to other people about the Hold Steady that I just know locally, and they don't know what I'm talking about, like, because they're a smaller band for New York. But then you see all these people come from all over the world, and you're like, wow, like, they really do reach far, and it gets highlighted when you're at a stream like that, like you're saying.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but don't they have, like, fans from New Zealand that have been over, like, to over 80 shows? Have you?
Yeah. There's one lady that we always meet every year at Brooklyn Bowl, and I believe she also comes from New Zealand, and she's been at every one that I've been at. It's a hell of a commitment, man.
Yeah. Well, the amazing thing about when they came here last year was they only played Melbourne, you know, and you think coming from America to Australia, like, it's a pretty long plane flight, but they still only did the three shows in Melbourne. So people came from all around Australia and New Zealand for that, you know, like, yeah, we were talking to the guys from New Zealand and, you know, so when we go over there, you know, they'll take us out to show us some band, local bands over there and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, Melbourne was like the epicenter of Hold Steadiness for that that weekend. And, you know, everybody from Australia was in coming in for it. It was and it's a great way to do it. I mean, I remember hearing Craig talking about why they do it that way. And, you know, it's a really great concept, I think, for how to do a show, because you get, you know, you think, well, a show goes for about 2 hours. So we got 6 hours of the Hold Steady and probably only about an hour of it was repeated.
Right.
You know, the rest of it was all different songs, you know, because where we get 78 songs, I think, over the 3 nights, you just don't get that anywhere else. It's just a brilliant concept, and it works so long as they're playing in your city.
You know, and that's a real testament to them as a band, and we've talked about it on this podcast before, just them as a band and the way they create set lists and the way they're able to sort of shuffle songs and songs you sometimes hear play together seven times on the eighth time is not going to play together. Like, and they're very conscious. I know Craig in one of the VIPs we're in says that he, like, really pays attention and puts the set list together well in advance of even those shows being played. And I think as a fan, like you were saying, you realize that and you can go to shows from 90% of bands. And if you go three nights in a row, 80 to 95% of the stuff is exactly the same, where Hold Steady really does, you know, a job, like, short of the song that ends the show, you can kind of have a fair shake of trying to guess what the opener is, what the encore is. Like, nothing is ever really that set in stone, except of course the big finale that we all know.
Yeah. And of course, when they came here, they opened up. So the third night was a fan favorite. So we actually got to go on a website and vote for what we wanted. You know, they opened that night with Positive Jam, which was a great way to open a show. Like, you think every other night came in with full on intensity. You know, it's Constructive Summer and bang, in we go, big songs and, you know, drag you in. And after the first three songs, you know, you're exhausted. But then when they did the fan favorite, we started with Positive Jam and it was just like a lull me into it type of thing. It was a, yeah, so each of the shows, they just had a different feel. And, it means you don't mind spending money to go and see them three times in one weekend. And, you know, if you're in America where you've got the chance, you know, fairly easily to go to other places, yeah, you could easily do it and you'd never fail to be entertained or enjoy what you're doing. Yeah, I think it's a great concept, and that's right. One of the reasons why we love the band, isn't it? That they think differently to other people.
So now, have you caught the travel bug yet to go see them in other places yet?
Yeah, really want to. I mean, I keep looking at the car racing schedule around the world and look at where they're playing, and I'm hoping, I haven't got it confirmed, but I'm hoping to come over for the Indy 500 again this year, and then I'm going to do 2 or 3 weeks worth of work around that area. And I think the Hold Steady's playing Chicago just about the time when I'll be coming home. So
nice.
I reckon if I do that, I'll be hanging around for that weekend and making sure I get that in. And
that's going to be a pretty incredible weekend too, because they're playing they're playing with the Mountain Goats, and they're also playing with Dillinger Four, which that's a great showcase to see them with. I mean, Dillinger Four, because they have so much history with them. I mean, there's references in Hold Steady songs about Dillinger Four and the Mountain Goats for that matter, but just those guys are all friends, and I think the energy is going to be insane that weekend.
How beautiful. Yeah, so hopefully I can make that happen. So I'm sure I'll see a couple of you at that show at least, but
you might see all three of us at that show.
Yeah, well, exactly. But that'd be good. So yeah, if I can manage it, absolutely I will. But you know, I've seen bands in other parts in the world, you know. I remember seeing John Cale playing in Italy at one stage, and I've done a few bands when I've travelled to London and so forth. I'm kind of lucky. I do travel quite a bit for work, both here and overseas, but I also travel a lot as much as I can for pleasure. I love travelling. I love going and exploring cultures in other places, and the culture to me is understanding all of those little parts and the live music scene and the bars, that to me is part of how a city is today.
Right.
You know, it's not like going to Rome where you look at what it was 2,000 years ago. If you want to see what it is today, you go and look at its art scene. It's what sort of art is it creating? What's its music? What's its, what sort of paintings are they? Is there graffiti on the walls of everything that's interesting? You know, all that sort of stuff. And that's, that to me is how you determine the culture of a place and the soul of it.
Right.
So lovely. Was I don't know whether you watched the thing a few years ago. Dave Grohl did the record where he went to 10 cities in America and recorded a different song in every city using some of the local people.
I love
was
that
Sonic
show.
Sonic Highways? Was that the
Sonic
name of that
Highways,
record?
Yes. Sonic that was Highways. Excellent.
That was brilliant. And the video that came out with it as well. And that was great for somebody like me, because you're thinking, well, what am I getting from all those cities? Like, certain things. You're going to get blues and jazz out of New Orleans and we got the grunge scene out of Seattle, and I knew a little bit about the other things, but I didn't realize that, Washington, D.C. had such a strong punk scene, for instance, and all those sort of things. So it kind of gave me a little wrap-up of all of those sort of things as well, and that was a really good concept, and I enjoyed that. And it's one of the vinyls I've got sitting in the other room, but it's good.
Well, you mentioned Triple J is the reason you discovered the Hold Steady. Like, now that you're sort of well versed in them, do you have a standout record that's sort of your favorite? Like, is there a track that most appeals to you that is your must want to hear? Cause we know the one that got you into it, cause you heard Chips Ahoy on Triple J and that was part of it. But like, now you've had this so much more material, so much more time to digest. Like, what about the band still appeals to you and actually now may have become or transcended that first experience?
Yeah, I still love going and finding what Holly's up to every time something new comes out. It's really, what's Holly done this month type of thing. So I love that journey because, I'm a writer as well. So, for me, the words and the story that's created and that's to me is what's so great about the Hold Steady is that, they're really giving me a story that has something that I want to attach to and that I want to understand a little bit more about. So I actually went down one day and I wrote down all the songs with Holly references in it, and I tried to put them in a chronology so I could understand Holly's life, because I wanted to actually try and turn it into a musical, so the Hold Steady musical called Holly, and just say, here's how it. Holly started, and then she declines, and then she comes back. And so one of the songs that I really associate to is I Hope This Whole Thing Didn't Frighten You, because it's one of those things where, like I, Despite the fact that I've got crazy hair at the moment, you know, I work inside law firms and accounting firms and insolvency firms, giving them marketing advice. And it, I've got this other side of me, which is all about, you know, punk music and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, you take a friend out to see a bar, a band, and like their eyes are glazing over. And it's like, so kind of like, you know, it's just the guys in the band, you know, it's the, I'm not one of these people. I don't go around stabbing people. It's just the guys in the band. You know? And so when I first heard that song and got the lyrics, it was like, oh, that's kind of me sitting there in that song. And so I've always really attached to that. And obviously the twin lead guitars are just unbelievable.
Right.
But then my favorite song off that album is Oaks. I just think Oaks is a piece of genius. That distorted guitar solo toward, you know, towards the halfway point, really. But, you know, it just blows me away. I love listening to it every time. And I told the kids if they didn't play it when they were down here, I was going to sit in the corner and cry. And I had to sit in the corner and cry, didn't I?
You don't hear it very much. It's not one of the
I've
ones
never heard
play.
It live.
I think I've only ever heard them play it when that record was new. And
yeah, I think looking at the set list, setlist.fm, I think it's only been played about 20 times.
Right.
And that's it's a really small one. But when we were leaving the hotel, the pub out the back, Tad was having a smoke. And so we stopped in and had a chat to him. And I said, you know, if you don't ever play that again, I'll just go and find another band to follow.
I often wonder if they don't play it very much because that was supposed to be the last Hold Steady song. They were originally planning on, like, that was going to be it.
Pulling the pin.
Yeah. And I think Craig says in an interview the reason why the song is kind of hopeful towards the end is because that's him, kind of holding out hope that the band was going to continue, which I always found really cool. Yeah. But
perfect. Yeah, I hadn't heard that before, but it makes perfect sense when you talk about it, because it's, you know, it is a desperation, but at the end of it is, you know, there is something waiting for us, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great song. But, you know, to me, that's the pivot point in the Hold Steady. You know, we had all the early stuff, which is, you know, amazing and obviously mind-blowing. But when we brought Steve in and put that band back together, and then when France came back, you know, it just evolved into something else.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if we thought it was the best band in the world beforehand, after that it was undoubtedly the best band in the world. You know, it's just got everything, you know. And then the way Tad and Steve work as guitarists, you know, they've got different sounds and different techniques that they employ and bring out to us, you know, whether it's the sliding of the pick along the guitar or, you know, Steve's distortion and all that sort of stuff. I think it really just changed them. And, you know, they came out as something really different and really special. And then the way they've taken the old ones and put that second lead guitar into it and made them something else again. So, you know, it was an evolutionary step that's just brilliant.
I remember seeing them when Franz had first left the band and thinking, like, how's this going to work? Because even as they would just literally skip over keyboard parts and continue playing the song, and they would try to fill it with a guitar. And, like, in your head, you're hearing the keyboard parts. Like, they're still there. Yeah. Like, it's part of the thing. And then when Teeth Dreams came out, it was such a different record for them. So it kind of made sense that, like, yeah, they might be breaking up, and it felt that way. But when Franz came back, it was an incredible moment for sure. That seeing him the first time in New York, it was unreal. Like,
well, Franz gives him so much personality, right. and it's not just what he brings musically; it's the personality that he brings to it as well.
So, Andrew, were you telling me that you have a book in the works, and were you telling me it was kind of slightly based on this, or part of it came out of this podcast?
Absolutely, yeah. It's I remember when you I can't remember who Christian, I think, was you spoke to after the Melbourne shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And he was talking a little bit about, you know, the music scene here, and you know, spoke about the Corner Hotel, which is where, you know, White Stripes wrote Seven Nation Army and a few other things. And I started to evolve the idea of this, the history of the band scene in Melbourne. Of course, the cut book will be called Bar Band. Thanks, Hold Steady. So what I want to do is I'll go around and I've actually got a documentary maker who's going to work with me on it as well. And we'll sit down in there and we'll go through the history of the major venues and some of the smaller venues in Melbourne. We'll talk to some of the older musicians and some of the newer musicians about what's going on and why Melbourne, you know, gives them something special. Yeah, because it is a great place for music, even though it's not what it used to be. But I suppose, you know, in bar band music anywhere in the world is not what it used to be. You know, it just gives people back. So I thought, you know, great little thing to go around and look at maybe 20 to 30 different bars in Melbourne and tell the story of them. So, you know, talk about the Croxton Park where they did the two nights, which, you know, bands like AC/DC and In Excess and so forth cut their teeth before they went overseas. Oh. Down to the Corner Hotel where people come now to play, you know, and do their special things, or the Forum where, you know, those medium-sized bands like The Darkness and so forth play. You know, it's a probably 2,500-seater, standing, sorry. You know, so you've got the Croxton at about 1,000 and the Forum's about 2 to 2.5. The Corner Hotel's probably in about 500, you know, so they've all got the different sizes. But, you know, there's so many stories to tell. And as I say, you know, just watching, listening to it, you know, to Christian talking about it, it was just like, you know, it'd be great to actually tell people the story and how it all happened and where some of those bars have gone. You know, the Station Hotel where, you know, they'd band 7 nights a week and now they don't do anything. So, you know, where did it go and why did it go? You know, and that's you probably get the same thing in America where, you know, a part of a city changes over time.
Absolutely.
You know, one day, you know, it's kind of grungy and dirty, and then the next thing you know, it's all the yuppies have moved in and everything's been polished and shiny. And, yeah. And you know, live music's not good for that, is it? Because, you know, you might have upset my quiet, even though the bar was there before you got there. But, you know, we'll go and shut that thing down, won't we? So, yeah, so I want to do a book called Bar Band, and as I say, hopefully we'll have a video at the back end of it, and then it'll go through the stories and maybe even, you know, when some international bands are here, we can go in and talk to them about, you know, what makes it work.
That's pretty cool.
The second part of the inspiration was Craig and talking about the Corner Hotel show in 2011, which he says is the best Hold Steady show ever.
Oh, wow.
And he reckons he knows because he's been to every one of them. But he says that's the best show ever. And I'm thinking, well, why would a band like the Hold Steady, which has got all of that, you know, connection to America and the stories are so American as well, you know, the boys and girls in America and the connection to all of the things and the life over there of the bands. And, yeah, so why would Melbourne be so good? And that's the kind of thing that I'd love to tap into. What is it that makes Melbourne great for it?
Cool.
You know, and it's interesting too, because Melbourne's had so many artists that have broken through, even through the years here, like of all different genres. But I like the last band that comes to mind from Melbourne, I think, is Jet. And they had that amazing debut that literally took the U.S. by storm in early 2000s. And then, never heard from them again. And whatever the reason was, and I didn't follow the band well enough to know, but I just remember that record was everywhere. And Are You Gonna Be My Girl was in the Apple commercials. Yeah. And it was just, I could still listen to that record. And there's so many great songs on it. But, like, it's interesting, like, so that was almost probably 22, 25 years ago, whatever it was. Yeah. Like, you know, and you just kind of go, what happened? And so it'll be interesting to see as you kind of do this dive into the Melbourne music scene, like, what happened? Because then you could also look at a band like Air Supply, who had a million AC adult contemporary hits that they're still touring here. I still see them playing Westbury Music Fair here in New York. Like, once a year they make their way over and just sell it out. 3,000 people, 2,000 people, whatever it is, people go and hear those love songs over and over again.
It's interesting. So, yeah, like, even back then, you know, Melbourne, you might not have been a Melbourne band, but you had to break Melbourne before you could leave Australia. You know, so it was the point. It was that critical part to where you went. So, you know, AC/DC was from Perth and Sydney, effectively. They had to come through Melbourne to get to America and the world. And Air Supply and Little River Band, you might know. Little River's actually... Sure. Just outside of Melbourne. So it's actually a proper little place.
I'm going to be working their show this week, their next couple months, and they're actually coming to my casino. Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yep.
Wasn't Crowded House from Melbourne too?
Kind of. Crowded House, they formed in Melbourne, a bunch of Kiwis, so New Zealanders, but formed in Melbourne. You know, actually lived down in Elwood. So, you know, they'd been here for so long and they were effectively Australians. But they had a band before that called Split Ends.
Mm.
or the Finn brothers that were in Split Enz, and then they created this thing. But it was in Melbourne, effectively. That's where they started. It's where it evolved from.
Wow.
Yeah, all sorts of other bands from that era. I don't know if you've heard of Hunters and Collectors. They're quite another big band. And
one of the bands that I got from Christian that feels like a band I definitely should have known about, but has now become like a favorite record, is Gang of Youths. I know they're Sydney, yeah, and not Melbourne, but like, what an incredible record, and would have never heard of them if we didn't speak to him. Like, so I'd love to hear more about Australian music.
Yeah, and the great thing is, though, you know, it's the variation. And I think, you know, I mean, any big city is going to have a lot of variation in their music, you know, from, as you say, from your Gang of Youths through to, you know, the punk acts that are running around, or the, you know, the softer, more dancey type things. You know, there's all sorts of things happening. And, you know, I think the benefit, the great thing about a big city with that's got an active arts culture is that you're going to get all of that. And as I say, you know, you come in from another city in Australia, you know, I don't know whether you've heard Craig talk about a band called The Saints. You know, they're from Brisbane, but again, you know, played a lot of Melbourne. This, you know, they were back in the Sex Pistols type era. You know, Chris Bailey, he died last year or the year before. But Craig loves them because they were a punk band that had horns. You know, they'd always have these songs with horns going through it, and, you know, Know Your Product and those sort of things, which were amazing. And he spoke about The Saints and part of their influence on him during our VIP days. But yeah, just come on into Melbourne. You know, there's a bar somewhere for you at the end of the day. You know, it doesn't matter how big or how small you are. We've got a bar from, you know, anywhere from 50 people up to 2,000 people. You know, and you can pull people. It doesn't matter.
Nice. So now, when are you aiming to get the book out for?
Well, I've got two other books I've got to finish first. So I'm doing some books on Australian rules football. So I don't know whether you can see my little book supply there, but they're some of the books I'm using for my research. So I'm doing some history on football from 100 years ago. Putting together that. So, yeah, so that'll go through. But once I got this one out of the way, which will probably be in about a month, I'll probably go out and start to do a few interviews and things. I've started writing the history of the Croxton at the moment. Then it's getting into a few other things. So, you know, still got a few good mates in bands, so we'll go and have a chat, see how we can evolve. So it's probably a next year task. Okay. I've got to work out whether I use a publisher for it or whether I just do it myself, because I've got my own publishing business, because sometimes you just got to publish your own books, don't you?
True.
So, you know, I can always do it myself and roll it around and see what happens. You know, modern techniques, you know, you don't have to print books and hold them in a warehouse. You just wait till somebody pushes a button and buys it and do it that way. So, you know, it means you can take a bit more of a risk on things. You know, if it's only my time, it's okay. You know, if it costs money to do something, it's a different story. But if it's just, you know, right, if I go out one night a week and visit a band in a bar, you know, it's a dreadful chore, isn't it?
Not the worst thing to have to go see live music once a week.
Absolutely.
I know, it'd be dreadful, wouldn't it? It'd just kill me.
It would almost kill you.
Almost.
It's almost.
No pun left untold.
Yes. That's funny.
So, Andrew, I had one more question for you. So, like, this is the part of the show when we have somebody from another country, and I usually ask them if there's any lyrics of Craig's, any of the slang that doesn't translate over to your country. I'll spare you that for now, sort of. But because of your background, I grew up in the same metro area as Craig. I'm the same age as him, basically. I'm even wearing my reading glasses today. But he had one lyric that I could never make sense of, and that's when he said, "She got pinned down in the party pit," and a couple other songs he said, "She got pinned." And I could never understand what he meant by that. Now, with your background, does that make any sense to you, what he was saying?
Somebody got pinned down in something, I'd be thinking they were in the middle of having some sex.
I guess he's talking about the tachometer, the tachometer getting pinned. If he would have said redlined, I would have understood. I know what redlining means, but I didn't know what the tachometer getting pinned down. I didn't. I'm not a car guy, so I didn't get that reference at all.
I always took it as a drug reference.
Yeah, I thought it was a drug or a sex reference was my thing. But then there's a lot of drug references, isn't there?
Well, I think it is, and that's what he means. He means she's totally redlined, totally pinned all the way to the end.
Kind of makes sense.
Okay, well, we all learned a little something here today, I thought.
All right. there's obviously lots of things that where they're talking about the American lifestyle that that confuses us a little bit down here. But, you jump on the internet and work it all out. Like, even things like Ybor City, like, what the hell is Ybor City? And now I know.
I think we said the same thing. I said the same thing.
Yeah, not too many people in America know what Ybor City is.
This is one of the great things about the lyrics that come out of Craig and what they're doing is that, there's little journeys that you go on. I don't want to sit there and get something that I don't have to go and understand or go and look for the meaning of or go and find this or that or whatever. And I think that's a terrific thing about it. It intrigues us. It kind of grabs you. You want to know more about it. You want to know to know more about Holly or all those things and Charlemagne. And in fact, my ringtone's Charlemagne in sweatpants, by the way.
Oh, nice.
It's a great ringtone if you haven't got one. It's a great one. I didn't play that here either.
It's funny you brought up the idea of a Hold Steady Broadway play. I actually asked him that question a couple years back on his second solo record. He did like a crowdfunding thing through Pledge Music, and I got to go record shopping with him. And one of the questions I asked him was like, would you ever think about doing a Broadway play, doing the story of Holly and everyone? Yeah. And he does not plan to do that. but I relate totally where you're coming from. Like, it would work so well for us. And that's about it.
Yeah, I talked to Ted about it, though, and Ted said, we're interested in anything that's artistic. So I put the pitch to them, and I said, this is how it would roll, and this is how we could do it. And I haven't heard back from them yet, but I had to go through Dave, and he's obviously had his own health battles lately. So it probably slows a lot of things down. But I think it would be a brilliant play. And a bit like, Eminem when he did 8 Mile. It was kind of gritty and dirty, and it wasn't like your normal song and dance type show. And I could see something along those lines, but I could see it just starting, sort of drifting into that hole that she falls into, and that's your intermission. And then afterwards, you start the next bit with how a resurrection feels, and you start to pull out of the hole.
Right.
And to me, it's finishing off with, I hope this whole thing didn't frighten you, because that's her when she's, got all control. And I know it's not written about her, but for me, I can see it as being her. And she's back, showing her partner, the old place and, where she were, she fell into her hole. But she's much more accomplished and back in control of her life and all of those sort of things. And that's kind of what I kind of saw happening.
I would definitely go see that Broadway play.
I mean, and the great thing about Hold Steady and the songs is, even if the songs aren't necessarily about Holly, the stories you could really work into a narrative so easily, even if it's not about that character, whatever's going on in the music will easily become, a scene, a 5-minute moment in a show. So, there are certain bands that works easy for, and you can easily see it with someone like the Hold Steady.
And as I said, that's my thing. I hope this holding thing didn't frighten you. It's not about Holly, but when you look at it, it probably is. It's so tapped into the whole story and the vibe. And as you say, you can go through and there's all sorts of other songs. You think, he hasn't actually written about Holly, but it probably is Holly. And travel it through. So I think it'd be a great journey to take there. And try to do it. Probably wouldn't be on Broadway, to be off Broadway, I would have thought, but it'd be a lot of fun.
Well, I'd go see it either way. So being that you brought up the people talking about other bands that they're into, which is a segment we call Meatloaf to the Billy Joel, why don't we do one of those? Do you have a band that you'd like to recommend?
And the Meatloaf to the Billy Joel. Certain songs, they get so scratched into our souls.
Well, if we're talking current-ish type bands, there's a bunch of my old mates have started a new band called Truck in Australia. And they're from, Andy from Horsehead and the guys from JCJ's and the Argonauts and those sort of things. But the great thing about them is they got a piano. And there's bits in it where it's like I went to see them for the first time and it felt like I was sitting in a Hold Steady show when the, you know, the little piano solo kicked in. So it's got a bit of that feel to it, a bit like harder edge and rockier, but in a sense. But although that said, you know, the Hold Steady has its whole journey. But yeah, so Truck's somebody I'm really liking. I think they're back in playing next week, which will be good.
Great. Well, what's your favorite song?
The album's called Exploring Noir, Unconventionally Rising.
Okay.
Pretty good. So, yeah.
Cool. We'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, they're not a young band. They're all my age, so that makes them old. You know, but, yeah, it's good to see people, you know, can just have an extended career in the music industry that, you know, you can disappear for a little bit because you've got to do all the things with jobs and family and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, all the way under it is this itching thing to make music and to play shows. And, yeah. Right. It's always good. If you don't lose your creativity, I think is the bottom line. And you might lose your drive or your motivation at times, but you don't lose that creativity. And you know, and if you get the chance, you can come back and yeah, you can, you know, earn a few $100 each night playing a show at Cherry Bar here in Melbourne or something. And you know, that's enough to get you through to get the record out. And all, not that we do records much anymore, but although I think vinyl's changed all of that, we're all kind of craving physical things in our hands now instead of Spotify or Apple Music or whatever. And
yep.
Not that I ever lost that thing. I never really sort of invested totally in Spotify. I like it, but I still like having the hard things in my hand.
Right. There's definitely a difference.
I could walk out to my little records out there and show you my latest releases that have arrived. Just give me one sec. I'll be back.
Cool.
There you go. So these are my latest arrivals. I love Iggy Pop's Every Loser, the new album.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. It's just
unbelievable. That's
great.
It's unbelievable. So I got the special one of those.
Nice.
Wow.
Only 1,000 made worldwide. I did buy the special limited edition Guns N' Roses User Illusion 2. It's tickets, you know, all those sort of things. It's another Melbourne band here. It's called Full Flower Moon Band. Diesel. Okay. So they're actually in Melbourne next week. Sorry, they're from Sydney, so I'm going to see them next week.
Nice.
Elko Fields, they're a bit like a White Stripes.
Okay.
Except that the girl's playing guitar and singing and the bloke's playing the drums. So they're kind of the inverse of the White Stripes. As I said, False Heads from England. So, you know, really good little band. I'm really enjoying them. There's my near beer.
There you go. Oh, wow.
Just for proof. Bit of Muse. I love Muse, by the way. Lyrically, cool. Not as complex as Hold Steady, but yeah,
right. Pretty good.
And after listening to one of your podcasts, I did have to go out and buy the special edition of Stay Positive.
And, I that's a good one.
My wife got me the autographed one, so I have the signed one in my record collection.
Oh, cool. Fancy.
Yeah. Well, I got them to sign my Teeth Dreams while they were down here. But,
nice.
They were still very nervous at the time about COVID, you know, so they were trying to discourage us from going anywhere near them, but I ignored them. You know, handed my guitar, handed my little record up for the design and handed back. Cool. So, yeah. But, so they're just the last things I've been listening to.
Nice.
And, you know, and there's a few others coming up on my Spotify release radar that I'm traveling down as well. But, Now, given that you're going to edit this, I'm going to give you one last thing.
Sure.
On our bands. So in Australia, there's a band called The Angels who played for many years. Like, they were huge in the 70s. They used to tour with AC/DC, so that kind of thing. And Doc Neeson, who was the singer, he was a great, almost like a poet, you know. So again, the lyrics were really strong, like Craig's, you know, that there were all these little things that he didn't have them tied in from, you know, the story of Holly or anything like that, but he, you know, lots of different little stories along the way. And they were quite revolutionary here because they went away from the idea of having lots of coloured lights on stage to just white lights and created shadows. You know, because Doc was quite fascinated by theatre. And he said, well, in theatre, you know, we do all of these things. So he had just white lights on the stage and use all the white lights to create the atmosphere around things. And but lyrically, you know, they just had some great songs and the evolution of the songs. And so if you want to go and find something that's old, go and look for the Angels. And, you know, cool. Really good. Doc died from a brain tumour a little while ago. But one of the favourite interviews I ever did was with him. And, you know, he was at a – they were playing at one of the car races and I just did a story on them. And after we'd stopped recording the interview, we just spoke for the next hour about their music and all of that sort of stuff and life, because, you know, he was sitting at a toll booth paying his tolls and a truck ran over the top of his car. So he was in pretty bad shape for quite a while. So we spoke about the recovery and road safety, which is one of my passions, and going through that. But lyrically, I just love what they do. You know, there's all these little stories being created, you know, whether it's, you know, a song like Ivory Stairs or No Exit, you know, great little thing. So, you know, go and ever listen to a bit of Angels for me and you'll be happy.
Cool.
And even Hammond organ. Yeah, played Hammond organ on one of the albums. Nice. On the Dark Room album, there's a lot of Hammond organ, which is great.
Cool.
Awesome. Excellent.
Well, Andrew, this was a lot of fun. We appreciate the chat. And again, keep in touch as your project progresses, and we will definitely have you back on to talk about it.
Yeah, beautiful. And if I do make it over, I'll let you know. So it'd be great to catch up in real life. And I'd certainly love to catch Hold Steady in America.
That would be great to see you at one of the shows. Yeah,
definitely.
Some kind of kicking again. Oh, they finally got some discipline. Running up the score and stocking up like it's World War IV. The summer getting sprung and summer back in. You know it's always back and forth. And most of them are dead and some don't even.
Well, that was a great conversation with Andrew, and it was great to hear his picks for Meatloaf to the Billy Joel. Some of those I have to check out. I'm looking forward to getting into those and seeing if any of them stick. But that's going to do it for us here at the Hood Rat Recap this episode. If you like what we do, give us a follow, a listen, tell a friend, leave a comment. All of that stuff helps us as we continue to keep this podcast going for all everybody who listens. So we appreciate your time and your support. And thanks again for giving a listen. And Gasper, why don't you tell them where they can find us if they want to give us a follow?
Yeah, so if you want to find our social media, subscribe to the podcast, or find any of the episodes, you can go to our Linktree. It's linktr.ee/thehoodratrecap, and you'll be able to find everything the Hood Rat Recap there. It's a great jumping off point. So, Mike, you got anything?
No, I'll just keep hitting up this. If you want to leave us a voicemail, go to SpeakPipe on our Facebook page or Linktree page, and you can leave us a voicemail and you hear yourself on the air. That's all I got.
All right. Well, I'm Gasper. That's Kevin. That's Mike. And that was Andrew from Australia. And us guys, and all you guys, we are all the Hood Rat Recap.
Carrot party sausage.